Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to the greatest discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. Hey, I noticed that Round Springfield, which was formerly Everything's Coming Up Simpsons, is also a new Simpsons podcast. They probably don't even realize they have anus in their name.
We should tell them.
Yeah, we should tell them that our Max Fun sister show.
Allie Gertz would love to know that.
Yeah. Allie Gertz would be delighted to have us point out that she's been accidentally saying anus in a way that is very similar to the way we've been purposely saying anus.
I'm sure she'll be relieved to know that.
She probably knows. They've got to know, right?
They've got to know. They like dirty jokes.
Yeah. They got great senses of humor over there on Round Springfield. Check out Round Springfield on Max Fun if you're a Simpsons fan.
This is not a compensated endorsement.
Yeah, heaven forfend we do anything to help anyone else on the network that we are on.
Yeah, it's broken pool cues all the way down right now, Ben.
We'll see who fucking comes out of this alive.
real Lord of the Podcast situation right now.
They broke my glasses.
It's a real good twin, evil twin situation.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that this Star Trek Picard series was going to get so soap opera-y at the end.
Yeah, sure is. I want to get into it, Ben. Let's go ahead and talk about Star Trek Picard Season 1, Episode 9, Et in Arcadia Ego, Part 1. Ben, this is the only episode of Star Trek Picard without a written by credit. What do you make of that? It's a teleplay credit, and then it's a story by credit. And we've talked about this before when talking about Star Trek. When you get credit cloud, that can occasionally mean not good things about the episode ahead.
Yeah. I mean,
why not take a written credit here for anyone?
Teleplay would seem to indicate the same thing, but
But Shaban shares that credit in both areas. He's on the teleplay credit and on the story by credit.
Is it just one other person?
Teleplay by Michael Shaban and Ayelet Waldman, and then story by Michael Shaban and Ayelet Waldman and Akiva Goldsman.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know, because I think there must be like some guild rule that like means that there's some meaningful distinction between those
I mean,
two.
Akiva Goldsman clearly fucked everything up. Like it would have been just the two.
Yeah.
And then he popped into the room with some idea and then it just it blew up the credit structure here.
Yeah. It would have been so clean and perfect, Adam.
But Akiva Goldsman gets the directed by credit here.
Really?
Which is additional data point to how things are working.
That's very interesting.
For this episode.
So we come through the butthole and into orbit around Capilius.
Kind of a rough ride through the transwarp conduit, it seems.
Yeah, Jurati hates it. Everybody else loves it. Jurati is sort of my wife. Everybody else is me.
You get the sense that the Borg cube is built the way bridges are in the face of big earthquakes.
Uh-huh.
Because if it was a smooth ride, the Borg cube, I would imagine, is like structurally very tight.
Yeah.
But given that it's so bouncy inside the conduit, you've got to believe that there's a lot of wiggling and shimmying in the cube during transit,
the
right?
The cube is designed to expand and contract and weather all kinds of movement. I wish we had gotten a little bit of how it went for Narek, too, going through, because he is on their ass the second they come through and shooting them. And this is actually a really fun, scary dogfight because there's some mechanics at play that we've never seen before. He's using his cloaking device to make, like, fake second snake heads.
Yeah.
And
the way a ventriloquist throws his voice, he's kind of throwing his ship around.
Yeah. And then the whole shit's a brick in the form of a Borg cube.
This made me so happy. This is one of my rare predictions that came true, but...
Boy, I fucking laughed out loud when this happened.
It was so funny.
It is so amazing, this moment.
Because the cube seems too big for the butthole.
Yeah, yeah. You can tell that this is going to be like kind of a medical situation.
You don't want to strain yourself too hard.
You don't
want to
push a square peg that's that big out of your round hole.
This moment serves the surprise. You don't see 7 of 9 drive the ship the way I wanted to, and that's fine. But you know there's a scene missing here where she's like at the wheel of this thing.
Yeah. I'm like, fuck it, we're going in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And how scary, I mean, I guess we know later that the cube is not empty.
Right.
But how scarily non-staffed it must be to be in a thing that giant that is almost empty.
Almost empty,
has got
yeah.
to have a definite feeling.
Yeah. It's such a fast sequence. I think,
yeah.
like, one thing I thought about was, like, in TNG, like, occasionally there's a space battle where you, like, see, you know, you watch the little, like, dot of light go all the way around the circumference of the saucer before coming to a point and making a beam and hitting, and you're like, it can't be that slow. Like,
it's
space,
a
space fight can't be slow as molasses the way it always is on this show.
Yeah.
And these sequences, like, and then there's fucking flowers and they're just like crashing toward the surface. Like, stuff happens at such a rapid pace in this sequence that I was like, go back to TNG speed. It's too fast for me.
It's like you watch a war film or an action film before Predator, and then you see the minigun from Predator and you're like, that's how fast bullets can shoot?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the equivalent here. The space battle is so much faster than anything we've seen.
It's wild.
Yeah.
And like, you don't get the sense that like the flowers take any time coming up from orbit. They're immediately surrounded by a bunch of giant orchids. Raffi goes into the back and gets a giant vaporizer. And she seems really excited, but everybody else is really scared because one of these grabs onto their ship, the lights go out. And
she's
then,
like, this planet's carrying.
Planet's riding dirty. I like it. They are plummeting toward the surface. Plummeting toward the surface, but not scared. Like, they like go through the part of the atmosphere where it's like, you know, like burning fire around the ship. And then they're just in free fall and they're like, oh, cool. And then they all turn and Picard seems almost possessed or maybe just bonked on the head. Hard to tell.
The pace is so fast and then it's communicating something visually that seems a little bit familiar. Like, we know the many dangers of entering an atmosphere uncontrolled.
Right.
And so the idea that these ships might be protected by these orchids is something I thought of. On the other hand, they may be getting attacked by the orchids because their power is going out.
Right.
But also, like, I think we've seen war films where if you get caught in your parachute on a jump, it is the most dangerous thing to happen. So if it starts as protection and ends as danger as you're hurtling toward the ground, it could be a little bit of all those things.
And you are given no guide rope to understand this with.
I love how the orchids are able to totally consume the little ships, and then with the Borg cube, they're like, they're well, I guess I'll grab a corner.
Yeah. Very, very weird.
There's clearly a moment of confusion between those orchids where they're not exactly sure where to put themselves.
Yeah.
It's a real you and I in bed with our wives situation.
Does this go here? I don't know.
It is scary to see Picard in this state, and after the theme song, it is clear that he's been on his own mental journey. He's experienced a little bit of a clip show device.
Yeah.
While sitting in the seat.
We get all those moments of him forming the resolve in himself to go do this, meeting with the doctor and whatnot. And then he's being woken up in Six Bay by Dr. Girardi, who has scanned him with all the power's out on the ship, but she found a old school medical tricorder, not so old school that it would be a recognizable TNG era prop, but old school to her.
The sound felt familiar to me, though, before he opens his eyes, you hear that sound.
Yeah.
It's nice.
And she is wise to his mental issue. She knows about his brain thing. It sort of goes unspoken, but it is the elephant that is standing in the room with them.
I think what makes Alison Pill one of my favorite actors on the show is what she does non-verbally. And this is the moment that you hire her for.
Yeah.
She's saying a ton with a 1 centimeter spot on her chin. Like she's communicating that.
Yeah, it seems like she has a lot of control over that little spot on her chin.
Right?
Because she does that quite a bit in this show. But I wondered why she was so torn up about this. I didn't get the sense that... I mean, the last episode, they really butted heads.
When she first meets him at the Institute, she knows who he is by reputation, but she is not in awe of him as a celebrity.
Right.
I think I'm with you on this.
It feels a little unearned that she would be as shredded by realizing that he's going to die. Yeah.
Is what she's doing.
Yeah, which I didn't like.
Yeah.
I have to be honest, I don't think that that's a good choice. I think that that's a, jacking the fans off kind of choice. And I also...
I can do that myself.
Yeah. I'm doing it already. Don't put a hat on my hat.
I'm in agreement with you. While I like the performance...
It's in service of the wrong thing.
Exactly.
It's not in service of the story.
Yeah. Yeah. But this kicks off, Picard in this moment is like, well, if she knows, I guess I better make the announcement.
Yeah.
And so he convenes a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
In the rubble of the ship. the very sad McLaughlin group that goes hey, everyone, I'm sick and it's bad and there's no cure and I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. The classic Picard thing of my problems are my own.
Mm-hmm.
And none of you are at the pay grade where you would be permitted to ask me about it. So they're asking Soji about the settlement here. Capellia Station is the name of the encampment that they spotted as they plummeted from orbit. And she has kind of vague memories of what it is and what it's like. She's still pretty mixed up with her implanted memories versus her real memories. They also have a ticking clock because they know that the Romulans are headed here. The Romulans have had to warp. They're not getting there via Borg tunnels, but they're coming.
Much smoother ride over there for the Roms, you gotta believe.
Yeah. It's like the difference between taking a Zeppelin and a 747 across the Atlantic, you know. One is a real chill, smooth hang, but it takes a lot longer. The other's a bit brutal, TBH.
But there's a more metal way to get there.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to tell how fucked up the ship is, too, because there's a lot of talk in this episode of we've got a ship, we can leave.
Yeah,
but the ship looks fucked up.
If
on
only
the surface.
They could repair it. Yeah, the damage looks pretty severe.
They also get armed on their way out.
We might run into, I don't know, angry reptiloids out there.
And they decide as they leave the ship, maybe the first stop should be the cube. To go see if Hugh and Elnor are there.
Right, because it's in the distance.
Yeah.
And it's really fried-egged itself into the sand trap here. You're going to want to take a steep downward angle to get that one back up on the green with your swing.
They head over there and are surprised to find not Elnor and not Hugh, but Seven of Nine.
JL gets clocked as Locutus, like, from jump, and it sends him into that spiral. Like, it's not like he got over his time on the cube from before. Every time he's in close proximity to it or its inhabitants, he is very fragile. And so when someone clocks him as Locutus, he is like really freaked out for a moment until Elnor like almost breaks that spell with his hug.
Yeah. I really wondered about the cube. I mean, so much was made of those dosimeter badges that everybody has to wear in an early episode. Like, is the cube still potentially capable of regenerating? Is it still potentially capable of assimilating?
Yeah.
They're getting food replicators online.
What do we know about a Borg cube? I feel like we've heard the trivia from the very first time we met one. Like,
it's strangely generalized. There's not like control rooms or...
But like a massive percentage of it could be damaged or destroyed while still remaining functional.
Yeah. So there's a chance that there's a cube fighting 218 warbirds in the next episode because...
Yeah.
That's the other news. They fire up the long-range sensor and they get this just galaxy of ships that is heading toward them.
Yeah, it's a really fun scene when Raffi boots it up and sees what they're up against. But it's also represents how much better off the Borg cube is than the La Serena. It has power.
Right.
It has power and batteries.
Yeah.
And when Picard recognizes this, he asks them to boot up the sensors and they get a sense for how far away this settlement is too.
218 Warbirds was probably my favorite band I saw on the Warped Tour.
Mm. 709 does not look worse for wear here. She looks like she just got out of a shower. She's got that like towel dried hair going. She looks good.
Elnor looks chill too. Like, yeah, like, it doesn't look like they had a hard landing.
Everyone was making it seem as though, like, well, if they happened to be alive before they hit the ground, smashing into the sand certainly would have killed them.
Yeah.
They're fine.
Yeah, I was expecting them to find cat food on this on this ship.
Yeah.
They sort of just push Elnor and Seven of Nine into the corner and they're not a factor for the rest of the episode. It's like, cool, well, glad you guys are okay. Thanks for letting us use the sensors. We're out of here.
We're going to set this part of the story here.
Yeah.
And we're going to go that way.
Yeah. Like, are these people that have several times already in the series come in at the last minute and saved the day going to be, like, coming in at the last minute and saving the day later? Who knows?
Yeah. We sort of elliptically find ourselves on a hill overlooking this synth village, and it looks nice.
Yeah, like a very contemporary campus of like a UC that has like a, you know, that's oriented toward marine biology or something.
Yeah, its inhabitants are all in very good shape. It's clean in a way that made me nervous, like the kind of place you don't want to trample over something and then get sentenced to death at.
How very sad.
All of the synths are wearing very TNG era costumes, like costumes of people in a settlement that they would visit in TNG.
Right.
Like, you could get me convinced that they had saved costumes from TNG and just raided the costume closet, because a lot of them look like the costumes from Justice or other or like times that they go to Risa.
Yeah.
Like a lot of very revealing costumes.
Yeah. I mean, Data spent a lot of time in town squares too.
Yeah.
And the construction of this place seems very familiar in that kind of geographical way.
Yeah. Soji immediately recognizes somebody named Arcana, and Arcana has sort of slightly goldy skin and Data eyes, but not total Data. She's sort of maybe a midpoint between Data verisimilitude and Soji verisimilitude. The synths greet their visitors. They're a little bit unfamiliar with non-synthetics. Like, Arcana walks up and starts like touching Picard's face. It reminded me of something that they talk about a lot in the book that we read, the Star Trek Picard novel. Picard, several times in that book,
reaches up and touches his face where he was implanted.
Yeah.
And that's the part of his face that she touches as well. And
and also Picard's like, you know, I don't care for the movie Face Off.
I'd rather keep my face on.
This is a good moment.
Yeah. It's also the moment where they break it to these guys like, hey, part of the reason we're here is to tell you that there are kind of a shitload of Romulans on their way. And yeah. You basically got 2 days.
So y'all got any more of those orchids? You're going to need to make a shitload of them. And the consensus is no, they only have 10.
Yeah, there's 10 left.
They have 2 days left to make a lot more. Enter Brent Spiner.
Admiral Jean-Luc Picard, retired.
In the role of Brent Spiner.
He's Alton Inigo Soong, the son of Noonien Soong, who he wryly mentions is like, he conceived me, but he made Data and Lore.
Yeah, and never let me forget it.
Right.
Which is, this was not the reveal I was expecting. I think no? I predicted that Lore was going to be somewhere in this.
Right.
And I'm still wondering if Lore maybe was the positron.
Yeah.
Because of some stuff that develops later.
Yeah.
But
can't rule it out yet, certainly.
Certainly can't rule it out. But the vibes here are more than a little weird.
Yeah. AI Soong seems nice and charming.
Yeah.
But more than nice and charming, he's like restrained nice and charming, which seems like a kind of threatening in a weird way.
Like when he introduces himself as mad scientist.
Yeah.
It's like a many a truth told in jest.
Yeah.
Kind of a deal. Picard goes off and has this like solo tea hang, which seems really weird. Like, hey, well, you guys catch up. I'm going to like,
I never miss a tea.
I know that we're all going to be killed in 2 days, but I'm going to go sit by myself in the courtyard and enjoy some Earl Grey decaf. And this is where he meets Sutra, who we first just meet from behind. She's in some skimpy pajamas. And we're sort of cutting back and forth between this and Alton Soong explaining that, I warned Bruce about sending Daj and Soji into the human world, that we were going to bring attention upon ourselves that we didn't want, which is one frustration I had with this episode. Was it felt like the one where you would want to elucidate a little bit more what Soji and Daj were supposed to accomplish.
Right.
Maybe that's still coming.
Because there is a moment where I feel like Soji is asked if she did accomplish her mission, and she said, like, yes.
Yep. Mission accomplished. What was it?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
So that's weird. But also, Soji seems to be engaging in more dishonesty in this episode than she typically has. So
there's a real collaborative way that they tell this backstory, that like they share the knowledge that they've brought to them.
Yeah.
It
sort of feels like a like counselor's skit night at the opening of a summer camp.
It does feel like a presentation and you're tagging in and tagging out. Like, who's got the story stick now?
Yeah. It's like it's a very grooved out McLaughlin group. Sutra is feels very like dangerous, right?
She does. And there's something about her physicality that makes her so.
Yeah. She's slinking around.
Man.
And like too sexy to not be dangerous.
People are made aware of the admonition, and it's Sutra that wants to know more. And what she proposes is melding with Jurati.
Yeah.
In order to get that. And
apparently mind melding is something you can learn how to do by reading books.
Yeah. This is something that Jurati is understandably reluctant to do. And I think
you can tell because that spot on her chin starts going nuts.
Yeah. She gets to see the science video we've all seen in middle school. that begins with lava, and halfway through you see the fox decomposing.
Yeah, you see the flowers blooming in fast motion,
and then you see the vignette from Terminator 2 Judgment Day with the hands on the chain link fence. You see the whole thing. The thinking is that the admonition was a message only that synthetics could understand. And this seems to be confirmed because the version of this admonition video that we're watching is so much more coherent than in the versions that we saw when the ROMs were taking it in and when Jurati was too.
Boy, I've really liked this series so far. And this moment, it just didn't work for me. It felt like too convenient that she could just mind meld.
Yeah.
Like mind melding is like, it's convenient that Vulcans could do it. But it does. It has never been shown to be possible by non-Vulcans.
Right.
And this sort of implies that just like anybody who studies up on it can do it.
Yeah.
Which I think that what I wish happened was that they could figure out some way to get to the admonition and have her experience it herself.
Yeah. I agree with you that the way that Sutra gains this knowledge does not seemed earned in a way that makes sense, but also in a intelligence transference kind of way, Jurati should be made aware of the message contained in here as well. And she mentions none of it. Like what we learn is that the admonition is for synthetics and it's a warning. It's if any non-synthetic attempts to genocide synthetics, you have backup.
Right.
All you need to do is ask, and the cavalry will come directly.
We live outside of time and space, but we're like waiting for you, and we want to help you.
And our method of help isn't just helping you. It is exterminating non-synthetic life in the process. And so you got to believe Jurati knows this, right?
Yeah. So a couple of things came to mind for me with this. One is that like this breaks your mind if you are a Jat Vash initiate who can't take it because you're not technically compatible with the information. Like it's
right.
It's like meant for a different kind of thought process or whatever. But also the thing we learn about the XB Romulans is that they're like way more fucked up by being Borged and deborged than other kinds of humanoids. Maybe that's why it fucks up Romulans that try and interface with it. Like maybe it's the same thing at play.
Yeah.
Like having synthetic thoughts go into your head if you're a Romulan is, you know, Romulans are particularly allergic to it in a way that like maybe a human that tried to go, you know, on a vision quest at the Techno Stonehenge wouldn't have.
There's a lot we don't know that the characters do. And at the end of this scene, there's a lot that we know that the characters don't.
Right.
One of those things is that Sutra's poker face suggests that she's not going to give away the last part of this message. Jurati, either because she doesn't know or is in agreement with Sutra's methods, is also not going to give away the last part of the message.
Right.
And they part ways and go about their business.
Yeah. All this going about the business was strange and weird.
Yeah. Jurati's next stop is Soong in his lab, where Soong tells her that Maddox regretted leaving her behind. And Jurati's like, no, actually, like that was my choice to stay behind. I wasn't going to get into the family truckster and come out here and and do synthetic work. Like that wasn't my deal. I needed to stay behind. Like they're confused about each other and their motivations here right away. And then he tells Jurati that what she did was very, very bad.
Yeah, he really drags her for killing Maddox. Almost like it almost feels like he's doing that to guilt trip her into whatever he's doing with this body in this box that he has.
Yeah.
It kind of seems like he wants to download his brain into this body. Like he's going for the self-preservation play here.
I am suspicious when people say nice things about Bruce Maddox.
Yeah.
I think bottom line, like when Soong says that, like you extinguished his bright candle, like there'll never be another one like him again. And then he sings that song because Brent Spiner loves show tunes.
Yeah.
He's like, And it seemed to me Bruce lived his life like a candle in the wind, never knowing who to turn to when the rum set in. Picard would have liked to know Bruce, but he was making wine. The hollow doctor turned off long before he could have saved his life.
It's a really beautiful moment in the episode.
Yeah. That's just Brent Spiner doing Brent Spiner stuff, you know?
Yeah.
He loves that shit.
Yeah. Your rendition of it was also beautiful.
Thanks. I don't know how much we're bringing to this from reading the book, mm-hmm. the Picard book, but that is why I don't like or trust Bruce Maddox, and it's why I don't like or trust anyone who likes Bruce Maddox.
Yeah, well, I don't like or trust him from TNG.
Yeah, and that's enough.
Yeah, but the book fleshes that out even more.
What Soong does at the end of this scene is say, like, do you want to repay your debt, Jurati? Like, yeah. You can make it right with me.
Has the guilt trip worked, Agnes?
And it's suggested because they're standing over the golem body that it would have something to do with that, right?
Yeah, she's going to inscribe some Hebrew on the forehead and download Brent Spiner's brain into it. But my theory presupposes that actually Picard is going to end up in this body, and that's going to be the solution to the brain problem.
Please don't let it be that. While we're predicting things, my crazy prediction for this show is that Picard dies in the next episode. He does not get put into another body.
Wow.
The idea of Picard season 2 was a fucking lie.
Wow.
Because that's what...
He went on The View and tricked Whoopi Goldberg?
That's what new Star Trek does. You can't believe what you hear from them.
God damn, Frankenstein.
That's where I'm at. I think they kill Picard the next episode, and I think they're hinting at it. They're giving you hope, false hope like this, like the hope of a golem.
Yeah.
No way, man.
Wow. All right. Well, what do we want to... This is a bet. I think he dies, but is resurrected as an android.
Yeah.
You think he just dies.
Yeah.
Let's make it interesting. Here's my thought. Our tradition on The Greatest Discovery is at the end of a season, we binge watch the series one more time, and the episode after the last episode of the series is us recapping the binge watch.
Mm-hmm.
One of us is going to have to do that episode, that recap the binge watch episode while doing a power hour.
Is that the winner or the loser? That's what I don't understand.
The loser.
Wow.
There is a third way, because we could both wrong.
We could both lose.
I think if we both lose, we both have to.
All right, fine. 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 Deal.
Because so many Americans think getting drunk is fun.
Another thing that suggests something might be fucked up with Soong is that, like, there's never any talk of the science being done there being for the good of anything else but him.
Right.
Or as the realization of his great ideas.
Right.
Like, we're not making a new thing that's going to revolutionize this for the benefit of X.
Yeah, I wondered what the synths want.
They can't be content just playing kickball in the plaza.
And like playing the mirror game.
What do they do every day?
What's their life even? Sutra also just feels like the Stefan Urkel to Soji's Steve Urkel. A TV writer's conception of what a cool is.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, because up until now, Soji and her sister were so strong and mysterious.
Yeah.
And now we've pivoted fully into sexy and mysterious.
Yeah.
In a way.
We get this scene that's like Sutra going like, are we going to do the evil plan, Soji? And Soji going, I don't know. Should we do the evil plan or should we not do the super evil plan? And Sutra's like, you know you want to. And Soji's like, okay. I guess we'll do it, but we won't say what the plan is or anything about what the goal is in this scene, because this scene is just there so that you can remember later when we start being evil together. Oh, yeah, they had that conversation about their evil plan.
Right. You get the sense that one is scorched earth, one is not scorched earth. I'm not convinced that Soji at this point in time has been convinced. I mean, to me, they seem to be synthogger heads.
Hmm.
you know, Sutra's plan involves killing some people, and Soju's plan involves killing some people, but Sutra characterizes Soju's plan as like leading to a lot of death.
Yeah.
And it seems like we would maybe want to get some actual numbers attached to those two
proposals. I mean, you really want to pro and con this thing,
yeah.
I think.
Best cut in the episode, they turn and see that Narek is being dragged down to the compound by probably the first two synths. These twin brothers that look like the most bad and weird.
Oh, no. Really? I just thought they were real bouncer types.
I thought that they looked like they had been like golded up the most and like made look the weirdest.
Oh.
Like intentionally. Like, because there's people from all over the spectrum among the synths. And
yeah, it's a real United Colors of Benetton ad, except they're all gold.
Right. They're all different shades of gold.
Yeah.
She says, looked what the cat dragged in. Smash cut to spot 2.0.
Right.
I had a problem because she says, this is Dr. Jurati holding the cat, and Captain Rios comes in and she says, yeah, they made him, referring to the cat, drops the cat on the floor. This is clearly a female cat.
Oh, you were checking out its undercarriage?
Yeah. This cat has teats.
Oh.
It's a female cat.
Oh.
Just say they made her.
Wasn't that the deal with the first Spot, too?
I thought Spot was a girl, except for orange cats are almost always boys.
I don't know anything about cats, and I live with one. There's a cat that lives in my house.
Yeah, I envy that in you.
The next few scenes are goodbye scenes, because in this one, Rios enters, and he's like, hey, babe, got to go back to my ship and fix it up. I don't know if you know this, but it's very fixable. I know it looks bad right now, but I'm going to take it to a Mako.
Yeah.
America's Body Shop.
We're going to pound some of those dents out and fill them with putty.
High five.
No one's going to see this coming, but there's going to be a cool like summer rental style montage where everyone chips in and like does the thing that they're good at. Yeah. And that's going to get the ship back into shape. Rios is like us, though. He does not trust these people at the compound. And that's what he tells Jurati before he goes.
Yeah. I didn't even trust the ship fixer device that the one lady gives Raffi. She's like, here, it fixes ships. It's a ship fixer. Just go ahead and fix up your ship with it. That shit looked hella suspicious.
I didn't pay it much mind at all because what happens in that scene is I love you, JL.
Yeah.
And in what maybe is my favorite part of the episode is that moment. Like you can see it twist Picard up into knots, and he can't even say it directly to her. He's got to like do the turn away.
It's not my favorite moment in the episode. Like everything from I love you, JL, to him saying it back to her and then like, and then scurrying away, basically, I loved. But everything up until that, I was like, what the fuck is going on here? She's saying everything you've done for me?
Yeah.
What has he done for her?
Yeah, he's
like he did something for her by like tapping her on the shoulder and like making her his first officer on the Romulan spacelift, but that was
he ruined her life.
That came to a disastrous end.
Yeah. I am less and less feeling sorry for Picard's inability to show affection or feel love and more seeing him as like a tragic figure that doesn't have to live the way that he does.
Yeah.
Like I feel no empathy for his reluctance to share his feelings with the people around him. Like they're there. And like it used to be a quality about him that was like, oh, that makes him interesting. It's not interesting anymore.
Well, it was an interesting quality when he was a captain because he had to do that.
Because he had to.
It was a professional choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the idea that it's just like, yeah, he's actually just broken.
It's like muscle memory for him not to love. Like, fuck that.
Yeah. I don't dig that at all.
Yeah. We're going to have a lot of conversations about this in this episode, which is like, we like the performance, but we don't like the motivation. Like Michelle Hurd in this scene is rad.
Yeah.
And she kills it, but it just doesn't get you there.
Yeah.
Because of the motivation and what we know to be the truth of these characters.
Yeah. I'm glad that he comes back up over the top and says he loves her.
Yeah.
It felt true.
Yeah.
I don't know what she means when she says all the things you've done for me, though.
No. Yeah.
I can't think of a thing.
No. No, especially because like she could and should say that to Rios.
Right.
And you would definitely know what she means by that.
Right. Yeah. Picard has not taken a great interest in what's going on with her.
I wonder if there was a draft of this episode where that was Rios.
Interesting.
And they made it like, well, God, if we're saying goodbye to people, like we need someone to tell Picard that they love him, and we need Picard to have that moment, and we're just going to like brute force that scene into shape this way rather than the way it probably could have and should have been in a more true way. Anyway, Picard kicks it in Maddox's office trying to hail Starfleet, and of course he can't because either they're too far away or just not how the station is configured. Like, they've never contacted Starfleet because they've never wanted to. They've hidden from Starfleet.
Yeah.
Looks like Maddox has one of those sit-down showers in his quarters, too.
He was chilling the most.
Yeah.
It wasn't fully retired, but he was getting ready.
Yeah.
It's back with a lifetime warranty. Yoo-hoo!
I do like the type of house that has a shower with a big window.
Yeah.
Like,
there's nobody out there.
Yeah, but there could be.
Yeah. It's a little element of danger. Makes the shower sex especially exciting.
Yeah. I don't think shower sex is good, by the way. I think it's bad.
Wow. Hot take. Shower has some appeal to me.
This is the shower that you famously piss in. So you do a lot of things in...
God damn it.
In a shower. That's canonical Benjamin R. Harrison.
When it's the middle of the night and I just want to get back to bed as fast as possible. I'm not pissing in the shower while having sex in it.
You're a fucking freak, man.
We got to Narek in jail, and he is trying to trick one of the synths into opening the gate so that he can probably attempt to overpower her and escape. But Soji comes down and puts a stop to this, and then he sort of starts begging for forgiveness like a fuckboy spurned.
This was really great work by Harry Treadaway. I believed him. I believed him the way that I was supposed to believe him and fall for his bullshit.
Yeah.
It was that good.
It had a great deal of truth to the fuckboy who has lost his access to the woman who would tolerate him.
Yeah. I felt manipulated and that was effective.
He ends this by saying, like, I pity you. Like, she's like, I hate you, but I hate myself for pitying you.
Yeah.
And he says, I pity you because about 200 Romulan ships are about to start raining hot fire down on this planet, and you're going to be dead.
When my sister gets here, you're going to be so upset. Next stop for Soji after this is Picard, who's in Maddox's office, and they continue the conversation they started in the La Serena. If you remember, in the very beginning, they have a brief conversation about, like, well, what do we do about Narek and his wounded ship? Like, it's okay to shoot people on the battlefield. It's probably not okay to shoot wounded soldiers. We need to try to rescue him.
Right.
That was disputed at the time by Narek's actions, who, like, Narek was playing possum and kept fighting. But in this scene, Picard and Soji talk about, like, the nature of life and death and sacrifice and power.
Yeah.
And JL, like, in talking about the math of such things, is like, all that really matters to a person involved in such matters is where the power lies.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the trolley problem, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're the one person on the one side and watching somebody throw the switch to save the eight people on the other side, you're pretty mad at the person that threw the switch.
Right.
You know? And that's sort of what he's talking about here.
There's a line of dialogue that I hope doesn't become literal, which is Picard telling Soji, the thing that matters is who's holding the knife. And God damn it, if in the next episode it's going to come down to, like, Soji going stabby on someone after a moment of thinking about it, that's going to be upsetting.
That would be bad.
But maybe it shouldn't be so simple.
Concurrent with this scene, Sutra has relieved Saga of Narek sitting and takes down the force field in order to go inside.
At some point, Narek got his face wound fixed in between the last scene and this one.
He's looking great.
Yeah. This definitely feels like Soji is keeping Pipes occupied while Sutra does this deed.
I was not thinking that. That's interesting.
Because they keep having the conversation and it ends with a like, ah! And it's very like, you know, dinner party murder mystery where it's like, wait a second. So it was Saga and Sutra, but then Saga left and left Sutra with Narek. But then when they run down there, it's Saga that's dead and it's Alten that's sitting there with her. So how did that all happen? Like, what did Saga go do? And then why is she back? And did somebody kill her over there and bring her over here? Or is Alten involved? Did Alten stab her? How did Alten overpower her when we know that these synths are super ass kickers when somebody attempts to try some violence on them? Was Saga involved? Did Saga consent to being killed for the betterment of all of the synths?
Steve McQueen's looking at all of the synths lined up and he's like, now that synth used to be in love with Narek. But Narek's currently being mounted by that synth over there.
A lot of questions.
Soji and Soji type synthetic sure do have a type, huh?
They really do.
Because I don't think this scene suggests it. I think it full on makes you believe that that Sutra would fuck Narek if given the chance.
She's like, I'm torn between using you, killing you, and fucking you.
Yep.
But I'm going to use you first.
Right. And then use you by fucking you.
Then maybe fuck you, then definitely kill you.
Narek's like, have you ever considered Mary? There is a third part of this game. Yeah.
We could both be stuck drinking a ton of beer.
Soji and Picard stand over Saga's body and they see the brooch like stabbed through her eyes.
Yeah.
And then like, this is one of the scenes in this episode that like really made me roll my eyes. Picard stands up, turns to camera, puts on his sunglasses and is like, Narek, we never should have taken our eyes off of him.
They get the funeral together so fast.
They really do.
Like, they
almost as if they're prepared to have kind of a lot of funerals there.
Yeah. And Sutra is, you know, eulogizing a little bit. And Picard comes in and is like, WTF? What is going on here?
Because you don't want to politicize anyone's funeral. And that's what's happened here.
Yeah.
It's turned into an anti-organics rally.
Yeah. And they're saying, like, we've got to blow in a phone call to these extra temporal synthetics that have left this nice signpost for us. That's our purpose. Like, organics exist to bring us into existence, and then they have to die so that we can be safe and rescued from their oppression. And Picard is like, no, like, we've got a spaceship. We can get out of here and we don't have to worry about the Romulans.
He gestures to the La Serena, like, totally smoking and torn apart in the sand.
Yeah.
You're just going to have to use your imagination.
Yeah. I think it is Soji that turns to him and says, Picard, this ain't the Romulan rescue, comma, a triple X parody. do you think the synths that came to this funeral and had to stand inside the windows were in like the cheap seats?
That sucks.
Yeah.
You don't want to be up in the balcony behind the window.
That was like, we had that, like, one of our first live shows in Boston was at this like insanely crappy venue where they told us that the capacity was way bigger than it actually was. And then we sold it out and a bunch of people had to sit up in a bar and watch like a video feed of the show.
Yeah. Hey, venues, that doesn't count.
That's not cool.
Yeah, that was really shitty.
Yeah, I feel bad for these synths, but you know, I mean, they may be super evil, so.
Right.
And also, they built this compound, presumably, so they could have built it better.
This is an interesting scene because this is the moment where Sutra drops the knowledge that she learned from the end of the admonition video, I'm just going to call it.
You were sort of waiting for her to say it in the mind meld scene.
Yeah.
Picard still believes in his ability to persuade the Federation of his...
I love his instincts here. Like, if ever I was made to lawyer, surely it is now.
Lawyer Picard can come out of mothballs.
And it fucking works. Like, you could see his persuasiveness... become effective, and like you're seeing some nodding heads of recognition in
the
crowd.
And then Brent Spiner's like, we got to get rid of you because you are starting to fuck our plan up just by saying that stuff.
Yeah. So I guess Picard's going to go into the jail cell that Narek was once in, and they make the same threat against Jurati. Jurati, who has faced prison time for most of this season, the threat of it, and wiggles her way out of it by telling Sung, you know, like, maybe I could be useful to you, more useful to you here working alongside you than in a jail cell. How about
the implication being we download you into that golem so that you can go with the synths to synth heaven, right?
Yeah. That also underscores when Sutra gets in Jurati's face about, like, you better be ready to die for your kids here, right? If you consider yourself the mother of the synthetics, like, you're going to die for us, right? And she's like, sure. But no such question is posed to Soong, because Soong has the lifeboat up there in his office.
This new Federation unites synthetic life forms in a powerful alliance.
It's crazy how the story of the synthetics becoming the destroyers has been twisted into this.
Yeah.
You know, like, at first it meant one thing, but now it means something completely different. And the way in which it became different wouldn't have been made possible without the synth ban and the destruction on Mars and the thing that happened with evacuating the Romulans. Like, it self-perpetuated itself.
Yeah. And the fact that some clips from the destruction of Mars were part of the admonition makes it feel very... Like, I wondered, is that like...
That's a little Battlestar Galactic-y, this happened before, it'll happen again.
Yeah.
What's that about?
I don't dig it.
Maybe they keep updating the Techno Stonehenge with new footage. Maybe they George Lucas the Techno Stonehenge.
Data
shot first.
Yeah. They recast Data, and now it's Hayden Christensen that the robot morphs into.
You were the chosen one.
I hate sand. It gets in my gears.
So the synths arrest Picard, and the Romulan fleet is only a day away. Commodore O is on that bridge.
Yeah, the button on the episode is a long pullout of Commodore O in full Romulan broad-shouldered regalia.
I thought we should have stopped the episode there, but instead we cut to Starfleet HQ and we see like her out of office message.
Yeah, and that's actually where Picard was calling, and that's why nobody comes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Commodore O.
Believe it or not, I'm on a warbird, so leave a message.
Believe it or not, I'm a ROM. I think I know the answer to this question, Ben, but did you like this episode?
I really didn't. I have really liked the season so far. There have been stronger and weaker episodes, but I am very disappointed in episode 9. I'm not really sure, like, how you dig out of a hole like this. This feels very fucked up and messed with.
I am in total agreement with you, and you using that terminology made me think this feels like a comic beginning a set with 10 minutes of shit.
Maybe,
like,
it is.
As a test, because so much about this episode feels contrived in a way that the episodes leading up to this one didn't. It feels tonally off.
Yeah.
It feels like a bad day in the writer's room.
I've heard a couple of rumors about why Michael Chabon left the show after turning in season one, and I won't repeat them because I don't know of their veracity or not.
The copies of those rumors have little, like, if you attempted to put them on a copy machine, it would reveal where exactly you got the rumors.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Academy screeners.
Yeah.
You could get in a lot of trouble for spreading those rumors around.
Those rumors are watermarked, Ben.
Yeah. But this episode made me wonder, did Akiva Goldsman come in and meddle in a way that he found intolerable or something.
I wonder that too.
So I
I don't know.
I think I don't want to make it
Michael Chabon was the good guy and Akiva Goldsman was the bad guy, not knowing anything about it.
It's not what we're saying.
I can't see why you would take such a hard left turn into...
I don't think Michael Chabon's coming back for season two because Picard will be dead and there will not be a season two.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
We're in agreement here. This has been a really strong season up until now that I've really enjoyed watching. It feels like a different show this episode.
I also wonder, just like, has the world changed so radically in the last week that I like can't take joy in something that I liked before?
You're now anhedonic?
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case.
I really hope not.
If this is a dig, if this is a stand-up comic dig, then the next episode should be amazing. Like, dig out of it, guys.
Dig out of it. Show us what you got.
I'm rooting for it. I want it to happen.
I do too. And there's a lot of pieces in place that could be really fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
It could be a...
Rise of the Borg Cube?
Yeah.
Out of the sand?
Yeah. I mean...
Give me that shit. Give me season two that's just 7 and 9 cruising around in like a beat up Borg Cube. Like, Borg Cube joins the Fenris Rangers and starts kicking some ass in the old neutral zone.
The Fenris Rangers become more powerful and more respected than the Federation because idiots are running the Federation now.
All right, I'm on board.
Yeah.
Picard, clearly dead. Everyone knows it.
Mm-hmm. Picard, clearly an android. Everyone knows it.
I think Picard would have really weird feelings post-Borg about becoming an android.
That's why I think it's kind of an interesting direction for the, like if that's the thing that you put at the top of the cork board when you're starting to break a season of like, that's the point we need to get to. How do we get there?
God, like Sir Patrick Stewart's just hard at work recording every word in the dictionary so that Robo Picard can live on for season 7 of Star Trek Picard.
Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't have to come into work, but he still collects a paycheck and a team of animators in South Korea is just,
oh my God,
working around the clock to make his performances seem semi-believable.
Please don't let it be that.
Please, please, please. have we been lured into a trap, Adam?
We'll still do the show. We'll have to do the show.
We have to. We don't have a choice.
Wow. That is our golem that we're trapped in. We're locked in this podcast golem, Ben.
You want to see if we have any Priority One messages, my man?
They're not a threat at all.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Well, this is another one of those eps that was going to be a Max Fun Drive episode, but is not because of the global emergency. And the priority this week is take care of yourself, continue to heed the admonitions of medical professionals.
And medical professionals only.
Yes, not podcasters.
No.
We're thinking about all of you guys, and we hope that this show and the other shows we do are a comfort in this scary and weird period of history.
Reach out to the Friends of DeSoto if you are on social media and link with them. I know there are a lot of people out there attempting to do good.
Yeah, I think that social media can be a real wasteland and can be very triggering. But if you filter it to just be Friends of DeSoto, it's just going to be like Star Trek memes and fun goof-arounds. And that's always welcome in my book. So, and if you'd like to buy AP1 on the show, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And we could really use the help.
We sure could.
Squarespace. Got to build yourself a website if you want to stand out online. Social media websites are not cutting it anymore. And you really can't tell the story of what you do and sell your products or services or time effectively without a really great looking website. Squarespace is the way to do it. Using Squarespace Blueprint, you can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options. You make a seamless checkout option for your customers. You can accept PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Amazing. So head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself an Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin! I did. I'm going to give it to 7 of 9. I really like that she was just doing bits. She's in very little of this episode, but she like dumps a body off of a high ledge and asks Picard if he's here to fuck things up more, which I just loved her attitude. I thought she was Larkining the most, at least as far as I was concerned in this episode.
We're going to double this one up, Ben.
Crazy, right?
Because I felt the same way for exactly the same reason.
Nice.
You know that I'm in the middle of an unpack portion of a move, and I love the idea that 7 of 9 crashes the ship into the planet, and like, you don't even know where to begin at that point.
We'll get rid of these Romulan bodies?
Like, pick a body, kick it off a ledge. We got to clean up.
Yeah.
In the same way that I'm like, I don't know what's in this box. Open the box. Mm-hmm. Unpack it. Get it done.
Just take pieces and put them away. It's something that you got to do shovelful by shovelful.
I'm going to say this also. Best hair of the season.
Mm.
Jeri Ryan, 7 of 9, this episode, that scene.
Pretty killer hair.
Great hair.
All right. Well, that just about does it for us. Oh, I guess I got to do the next time on, right?
Yeah, we have the season and what I'm calling the series finale coming up next week. It's part 2 of this episode, Ben. What do we see in the preview?
Well, Adam, we got a little edited package at the end of the episode showing a lot of orchids going up into space and fighting Romulans.
Did it look like 200 and...
It looks like quite a few, maybe one shy, was a shot of Rafi just like super faded off in a corner. So I think we know what happened to that one.
You know, have you ever tried cross-pollinating one of these orchids with maybe snakeweed?
It looks like the compound is also like self-reconstructing in some way.
Ooh.
Picard is begging Soji not to follow this evil path that Sutra has put her on.
Looks like Picard's out of jail in those scenes.
Yeah, and it looks like the La Serena is very flyable.
Huh.
So it may have gone by in a glimpse that I didn't catch, but no word from Borg's cube. So not sure what happens there.
I wonder if they blew their Borg load with the surprising appearance of it this episode.
Yeah.
They're not gonna hat on hat.
Maybe not, yeah.
Surprising Borg appearance, right?
It's like severing a head that takes a second to slip off the body with Elnor. Like, you can't do it more than once in a season.
Yeah, I mean, shit. We need more decap attacks.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get some.
Elnor was definitely punching some of those synths in this preview, so.
Yeah.
I mean, what you want to see is Elnor punch a synth in the face and then go like, ow, my hand! You know? That really hurt my hand very badly. Radical candor.
Yeah, he just turns to camera. Radical candor.
All right, we're going to leave it with throbs from here. So thanks for listening, and tune back next week for the exciting conclusion of Star Trek Picard.
Season 1.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Benjamin Harrison and Adam Pranica. It's produced by me, Rob Schulte. Our theme music is by Friend of DeSoto and YouTube sensation Adam Ragusea. The Greatest Discovery is made possible by the support of our listeners like you. Visit MaximumFun.org/join and pledge your support. If you'd like to discuss the show online, please use the hashtag GreatestDiscovery. You can find Ben on Twitter at BenjaminAHR. Adam is at CutForTime. And I'm at Rob K. Schulte. Thanks. We'll see you on the next episode of The Greatest Discovery.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.